Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the June NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it's their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'm going to call the meeting to order, and I just want to remind people on the phone to please keep your phone on mute unless you're going to speak. We heard some background noise during the operator's remarks. With that, Evan, can you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
I would be honored. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing, and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today.
Thank you, Evan. Danielle, could you call the roll, please?
Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo.
Here.
Tim Hillman.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Josh Weinrich.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Bill Elagia.
Here, sorry. Here. Couldn't find the mute button.
Samuel Kovac Orr, representing the governor's the executive branch.
Here.
State Treasurer Aaron Binder.
Here.
Acting Commissioner Kevin Jarvis from the
Here.
Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon, representing Acting Commissioner Ed Potosnik from the Department of Environmental Protection.
Here.
Mark Dorfey, representing Acting Commissioner Susan Ox from the Department of Banking and Insurance.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a quorum, and we are expecting Julie Antoine Johnson to join around 10:30.
Okay, thank you, Danielle. I'm going to give some brief chairman's remarks. First, good morning to everyone, and welcome to the NJEDA's June board meeting. Governor Sherrill has prioritized lowering energy costs for New Jersey residents and businesses while expanding the state's grid capacity. In her first 45 days in office, Governor Sherrill has signed executive orders freezing utility rate hikes, declaring a state of emergency aimed at accelerating in-state energy generation. Governor Sherrill has also approved six new energy projects that will provide 355 megawatts of large-scale battery storage. These investments in clean energy put money back in the pockets of taxpayers while bolstering business growth and attracting investment. Today, the NJEDA board will consider 10 items under the Ready for this? Reducing Emissions Through Retrofits Optimization Fuel Switching and Innovative Technologies Program, or Retrofit NJ, one of our better acronyms. Serving as a complement to NJ Cool, Retrofit NJ supports large-scale decarbonization and energy-efficient projects and must include at least three clean energy or electrification components such as solar energy storage and energy-efficient upgrades. These awards, totaling $75 million today, span across nine communities in New Jersey, from a technical school in Sicklerville to the Port Authority Trans-Hudson or PATH in New Jersey City. Collectively, these projects will add 20 megawatts of solar and 87 megawatt hours of battery storage, supporting an additional $238 million in economic activity and aiding power generation in nearly 3,000 homes. Together, these projects will further solar and battery storage capacity, lower energy costs, and eliminate over 845,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions. Retrofit NJ and NJ Cool build upon the NJEDA's existing clean energy portfolio. Programs such as NJ Zip, NJ ZEV, and CPACE not only reduce our carbon footprint but help businesses lower energy costs and create stronger and healthier communities in the years to come. With that, I'll turn it over to Evan for the CEO's report.
Thank you, Chair. This was, as usual, a busy month. this seat by a long shot as the treasurer, but I did get to do three different legislative hearings this month, two budget hearings for each house, and then one with the Senate Economic Growth Committee. Really interesting experience. Each hearing was over an hour or so. We could talk about the World Cup, data centers, our tax incentive programs, REGI, and on and on. It was very wide-ranging and kind of shows the breadth of what we do at EDA and how much attention the legislature pays to that. I also was struck in general, not 100%, but how civil, bipartisan the questioning was, which again I think shows the strength of the agency as one that both parties, both houses take very seriously and understand as an entity that can do some good. Examples of that I'll run through quickly. NJ Base opened this month, which is a landing pad in Jersey City overlooking the Hudson River and a city that's in a different state across the Hudson, where foreign companies can come and kind of get their foothold here in the United States. It's operated by a group called SOSA, one of the many different entities we work with to help different kinds of small and innovative businesses find their footing and grow. But this is a unique asset that we're lucky to have here in New Jersey, thanks to the work of the EDA, and importantly, in partnership with Choose New Jersey as well. And President Amy Herbold was there when we opened up NJ Base. Another big theme is energy, as the chair was remarking. Yesterday, I was at a conference at Rowan University to talk about nuclear energy alongside Commissioner Potasnik. And a different Coviello, not Kathleen, I'm used to being around, but BPU Commissioner Coviello, to talk about the state's approach to nuclear strategy and particularly the role that EDA has to play in that, both from an investment and financing perspective, but also in theory, harnessing the asset that we have at the New Jersey Wind Network, for the future development of nuclear as a really important and site that, frankly, in the United States stands apart as one that could be really put us on the front foot with respect to new investment in that sector. Last thing with the nuclear piece was just a lot of time spent, and just to Commissioner Jarvis as well, on the workforce and jobs opportunities that nuclear represents, both during construction, but then for the life of the plant, which will be decades long. I also joined the governor and Commissioner Suarez at an event where she was discussing guardrails around data centers and what we want to put up there. That, I think, again, kind of reflects so much of the work we try to do at EDA, which is threading pretty difficult policy questions and one which data centers represent. They cost electricity money, they cost money to produce, water, and so on, noise. But they are the backbone of what our future economy looks like. And so Governor Sherrill trying very astutely to figure out how do we continue to support being at the forefront, as the state has been, with artificial intelligence, but being fair and just to communities that host these data centers, as well as all ratepayers in New Jersey and all of PJM. Also, a big housing month. I was at the Jersey City Summit talking about all the work that the EDA does in Jersey City. Many of the projects for decades now that we've seen start to turn around that city, which is at this point completely, turn around and redevelop, EDA had a hand. So it's very nice to see all the incredible momentum. And again, very specifically, there was so much excitement from New York City folks in Jersey City about how much better they're feeling our business dynamic and development dynamic is compared to what's going on in New York at the moment, which is nice to hear. It's something we need to really harness and keep track of. The last thing I'll say is that in the housing area is that I had on, a couple of days ago, I guess on Monday, attended the governor's first EO17 convening. The treasurer was there, commissioner was there, Commissioner Suarez, executive director Walter, all in one room, in a really big room and a big table to get everyone together to talk about what we can do to tackle, along with energy, probably the second major thing we have to tackle as a state, which is housing affordability and production and rehabilitation. It was great just to be in a room that was so diverse beyond the usual suspects of, again, me and Melanie, Jacqueline, who are in the housing space very directly, but to have that more wide-ranging group of folks who could help tackle the problems shows how the governor wants to lead, really bringing everyone together. The last thing is we have a number of different celebrations this month. This is Pride Month, and so we're excited in a variety of different ways to be celebrating that, along with Juneteenth coming up in, I guess, 9 days at this point, as well as Jewish Heritage Month, where we'll be hosting a roundtable discussion actually tomorrow here at the EDA. So again, busy as usual, exciting as usual. We have a very full agenda that I'm excited to go through. And so I will conclude my remarks. I just, Danielle, if I want to make a special remark at the end, can I do that or should I do that now? Okay. You'll see a lot of energy items on the agenda. Almost none of that would have been possible without Jen Becker, who is very sadly, truly leaving us here at the authority. We are unique in so many ways, as you've heard, but a lot of it around energy is something that very few EDAs do in general, nationwide. And how we do it here, I think, is a testament to your work and leadership and your team. The amount of different ways we interact with that sector and finance and fund it, but also how we've never forgotten, this is in part, when you're initially hired, that it has to affect real people and need jobs and savings and to train people to take advantage of the energy transition in a meaningful, family-sustaining way. A lot of that's a testament to your work. And again, like when I worked in the last administration, you were hired for an entirely different scope of work, and watching your ability to adjust to the times and continue to be so effective for us, again, you'll see that in the agenda today, a testament to Jen's work. So again, a very fond farewell, and I hope, and I know you'll be staying fairly close, but thank you again for your work.
All right. Thank you, Evan. The first item will be approval of previous month's minutes. Before you are minutes from the May 13th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. Could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you, Elizabeth. Second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the meetings minutes are passed. We're now going to move to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Mr. Chairman, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by Teams, then by phone. Members of the public attending in person should approach the podium to provide comment. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted. Following the public comment portion of the meeting, a staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star then one to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to provide their comment. Now share the NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available online. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. Person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure enough time is available for all those who wish to speak. Related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I would now acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment. First, anyone in the room who wishes to address me? Okay, seeing none. Address the podium, state your name.
I am Charlie Tabelli with Starman New Photonics. We're excited to be here today. Through the New Jersey Manufacturing Partnership, we're excited to announce phase one, $150 million investment, 250 jobs for New Jersey, in critical AI infrastructure, bringing onshoring technology, we made here in New Jersey, of optical transceivers, photonics, optical transceivers for data centers. Not going to be very long, but I thank you for everybody and JEDA for your hard work, persistence, understanding our program, and we're excited to be here.
Great, thank you. Anyone else in the room? Okay, seeing none, should we go to those on Teams? Danielle, anyone on Teams who wishes to address the board?
To the public, if you're wishing to provide public comments, please use the raise hand feature or unmute yourself and announce yourself. I'm not seeing anyone coming up with public comment.
Okay. Next, to those on the phone, operator, can you read the open the public comment instructions, please?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may please press star then one at this time. One moment, please, for our first question.
Anyone on the phone, operator?
No, at this time we have no questions.
Okay, thank you. I am now going to consider the open public comment section of the meeting closed. We'll now move on to voting matters. As we do at every board meeting, just a brief report on committee meetings that took place between board meetings. The NJEDA Policy Committee met on May 28th and considered several recommendations which are being considered for action today, including 10 applications under the Retrofit New Jersey program, number two, a reallocation of Main Street Recovery Finance Program funding, and last, an updated US EDA revolving loan fund plan. Staff will present on each of these items today. In addition, the NJEDA Audit Committee had its quarterly meeting on May 29th, discussed various compliance and reporting matters, as well as approval of an updated committee charter for the Audit Committee. Just a note that the order of the agenda is going to change slightly today. The first thing we're going to address is community development, and Maggie Peters is going to discuss reallocation of the Main Street funding program.
Good morning. Maggie Peters, Director of Small Business Services. Next slide, please. Okay, probably two more slides, actually. So our request today is to allocate and redirect funding to the Small Business Lease Grant, SBLG, and the Small Business Improvement Plan. But before I do that, I would like to provide just a quick overview of relevant Main Street products and their current status so it's clear how the funds are going to move. The following three products were created with Main Street funding and are administered by the Small Business Services team. SBLG, Small Business Lease Grant, launched in October of 2021 to help offset lease costs for businesses expanding into new or additional commercial space. Since launch, the program has approved more than 1,000 applications, totaling approximately $26.8 million. SBIG, or the Small Business Improvement Grant, launched in February of 2022, reimbursing small businesses for eligible improvement and equipment costs. The program closed May 13, 2026, due to the lack of funding after approving more than 3,000 applications, totaling approximately $88.5 million. SBIG still has approximately 800 applications left to review, and we are going to fund as many grants as we can with the remaining funds and the funds that we allocate today. The Small Business E-Commerce Support Program launched in February of 2023 and provides no cost digital marketing and e-commerce consulting services. To date, 812 businesses have been approved, representing approximately $6.4 million in support. While the consulting contract will remain active through February of 2027, there is currently no additional funding planned for the e-commerce support program. Overall, for these three products, demand still remains strong.
And Maggie, just remind us the source of this funding. These are state funds,
correct? They are. Yeah, correct. Next slide, please. We plan to reallocate some of the funding we're requesting today to the Small Business Lease Grant, which is still open. This slide highlights the current funding status and the application volume. As of May 18, 2026, approximately $5.9 million remains available in funding for this program. However, the total pending applications currently exceed $11 million, leaving SBLG in a deficit of approximately $5.1 million. Additionally, the program continues to receive an average of 20 applications per week. With the additional funding being requested today, we project that we'd be able to keep the Small Business Lease Grant open through June of 2026. Next slide. Staff is requesting to utilize and redirect available funding within the Main Street Recovery Finance Program in order to continue supporting the Small Business Lease Grant and the Small Business Improvement Grants Program. The first request is to utilize the proposed fiscal year 27 governor-approved state budget appropriations for the Main Street Recovery Finance Program to fund the Small Business Lease Grant. The second request is to close the Small Business Liquor License Grant Program and reallocate the remaining balance of approximately $1.8 million to the Small Business Lease Grant. The liquor license grant only received 10 applications and we've only approved one. And third, requesting delegation of authority to the CEO to utilize principal and interest payments from the Main Street Micro Business Loan, which closed in February of 2025. Under the proposed funding distribution, SBLG would receive the fiscal year 2027 proposed funds, the remaining small business liquor license balance, and available micro business loan principal and interest payments. These combined funding sources are projected to keep the lease grant open through June. SBIG could receive available microbusiness loan principal and interest funds as well, but since it's closed, we would only be funding the applications that are already in the queue. They're eligible. Happy to answer questions.
And just to go back to, and the just to be clear, the fiscal 27, $4 million is contingent on the budget being approved.
Proposed, yeah.
Proposed. Any questions?
Yeah, Maggie, on the liquor license, 11 applications submitted to approve. The other 9, have they been withdrawn or denied? Or are they hanging out there? And to be able
10 apps in, 1 approval. Yeah, they've all been decisioned.
Okay.
Declined, withdrawn.
Okay. I know we talked about this, I think, in committee. Surprised that that program didn't get more uptake or? No?
Well, there's only those dormant licenses, right?
Inactive. Got it. Any other comments or questions? Anyone?
Yeah, Chair, it's Fred. I want to follow up that how much activity was in the small business liquor license grant program?
We received 10 applications and we've approved 1. Everyone else was ineligible.
Well, listen, it's a great move that we're going to reallocate that money. Good stuff, everybody.
Those were dormant licenses that had to be re-initiated, and we just didn't have the demand. Any other comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve the reallocation as Maggie proposed?
Chair, it's Fred. I move it.
Move it. Weimuth.
Josh, I'll consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thanks. Next is the updated U.S. EDA revolving loan plan.
Hi, Marshall, Director of the Business Banking. Sure. Staff has requested approval of the updated U.S. EDA revolving loan fund plan, which is required to be reviewed and updated at least every 5 years. The updated plan reflects NJEDA's current lending practices, aligns with the authority's strategic plan, and ensures continued compliance with USEDA requirements. By way of background, NJEDA originally received USEDA approval for its RLF program in 2018. The purpose of its federal program is to provide flexible gap financing to businesses that are unable to obtain sufficient funding through traditional financing. In 2020, during the pandemic, NJEDA received approval for $10 million in revolving loan funding and $1 million in administrative funding to support phase 2 of the Small Business Emergency Assistance Loan Program, resulting in 162 loans totaling $9.8 million. Now that those funds have been deployed and retained, so are revolving back into the fund, the plan has been updated to establish how those funds will be will continue to be utilized going forward, allowing NJEDA to use the RLF as a funding source within existing lending programs. As such, staff is requesting approval of the updated plan, including the continued use of RLF funds through NJEDA's existing lending programs. The board is also being asked to delegate authority to the CEO to execute any required agreements, certifications, or amendments necessary to implement the plan following USEDA approval. Next slide. The updated plan integrates the RLF into NJEDA's existing direct loan, small business fund, and premier lender programs rather than operating as a standalone lender program. This allows NJEDA to utilize existing underwriting, services, compliance, and operational processes already in place across the authority while continuing to deploy RLF funds efficiently in compliance with USEDA requirements. The plan outlines a two-pronged financing strategy that includes leveraging loan participation with NJEDA premier lenders to maximize private financing, in addition to providing direct financing, including the coordination with non-premier lenders for transactions that may not otherwise move forward without progress support. The plan also requests USEDA approval to continue utilizing NJEDA's existing delegated authority framework for program-supported loans consistent with the flexibilities approved under the prior plan. At this time, approximately $2.5 million remains available for future deployment following USEDA approval of the updated plan. And finally, following the board approval, the updated plan will be submitted to USEDA for review and approval. On approval, NJEDA will administer the RLF through a specific operational and compliance processes with a dedicated funding source code established to support the management of program activity. And this concludes the presentation. Thank you.
So again, this is all subject to USEDA approval.
Correct.
And if the funds are repaid, do the funds need to be remitted to the USEDA, or do they stay in our system?
They stay in our system, and a year from now, we will have opportunity to apply for a situation where we can.
I see. Anyone questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Aaron Bud.
Thank you, Aaron. Second?
Robert Chimko.
Robert, we'll take that one since you're on the phone. Anyone else? No further questions or comments. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you.
Board member Julie Antoine Johnson has joined the call. I was present for that vote.
Okay. Okay. Good morning, Jewel. Thank you for joining. Next,
good morning, everyone.
Josh, you want to give a quick report on the incentives committee meeting?
I would. Thank you, Chairman. The NJEDA incentives committee met on May 27th and considered three items, which are being considered today for action. One, tax credit application under the Aspire program, a tax credit award under the Next NJ manufacturing program, and two, cultural arts facilities expansion, CAFE, program applications. The staff will present these items as part of today's agenda. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Josh. Now moving to the first item is under Aspire, Annie, on the Christian Health Senior Housing Development Corporation.
We are requesting board consideration for about $35.3 million in Aspire tax credits for Christian Health Senior Housing Development Corporation. The project, known as Total Affordable Housing, involves the adaptive reuse of a vacant building in Totowa. The existing building is approximately 165,000 square feet and will be converted into 141 fully affordable senior residential units. The applicant is wholly owned by the lead developing entity, Christian Health, as parent company of the applicant, and retains ultimate control of the project through its 100% ownership. Christian Health is a nonprofit healthcare and senior living organization based in northern New Jersey, with experience in developing, operating, and managing senior housing and healthcare facilities. They've developed multiple independent living, assisted living, and continuing care and retirement community facilities throughout Bergen and the state counties. Its development includes ground-up construction, campus expansion, adaptive reuse, and improvement projects. The total development cost is $63.2 million to determine the appropriate award amount, ineligible costs, and other costs that were excluded, resulting in a total eligible project cost of about $58.9 million. Eligible Aspire award is 60% of total eligible costs as a project utilizing low-income housing tax credits, which is how we arrived at the $35.3 million award. The required developer equity contribution is 20%, which amounts to about $12.6 million, and the developers contributing $25.1 million, meeting the minimum requirement. Because the project is a fully affordable residential development, receiving LIHTC, the HMFC deferred fee model was used to evaluate the appropriate reasonable rate of return. The project includes a total developer fee of $6.8 million, comprised of approximately $3.1 million in deferred fees and $3.6 million in non-deferred developer fees, which is consistent with the agency's policy. And based on this information, staff is recommending board approval of an Aspire award in the amount of $35,367,767. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Comments? Anyone on the phone? Questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the Aspire Award as described? Thanks, Tim. Josh, I'll consider that a second. That was you, right, Josh?
Yes. Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the award is approved. Thanks, Annie. Next, Tomasita on Next NJ Manufacturing, Starman New Photonics.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, I would like to begin to provide a high-level overview of the program. The Next NJ Manufacturing Program is a $500 million tax credit initiative designed to strengthen manufacturing in New Jersey by supporting large-scale capital investment and job creation. It provides tax credits up to 25% of eligible project costs, capped at $150 million per project. To qualify, projects must create at least 20 new full-time jobs with 80% of their work time spent in the qualified business facility. It must be invest a minimum of $10 million in capital investment. The median of all salaries must be at or above 120% of county median manufacturing salary. Ensure that the facility is primarily engaged in manufacturing activities. Enter into a collaborative relationship with educational institutions and or workforce development organizations, and maintain operations and incentive jobs in the state for a 10-year commitment. So with that overview complete, I will walk through the details of the Starman New Photonics project. So Starman New Photonics is a newly formed U.S.-based company that will focus on manufacturing high-speed optical transceiver chips in AI data centers and advanced computing networks, such as hyperscale cloud operators. These optical transceivers include 800G products that are widely used today, as well as next-generation 1.6T products designed to support the rapid growth of AI and larger, more complex models. So compared to older copper-based wiring, optical technology can move more data at faster speeds and over long distances while using less energy. This is important because AI systems require huge amounts of data to be moved between computers. Traditional copper connections are becoming too slow and power-hungry to keep up. These new optical solutions, for example, help data centers run faster, scale more easily, and use electricity more efficiently. So Starman is owned by three long-established organizations with over 30 years of combined experience, technology, manufacturing, and global operations. You have Starman Holdings, BH Consultants LLC, and Cookie Tots Holdings. So SMP will leverage strategic relationships with established industry players to accelerate commercialization, reduce time to market, and avoid the delays and cost of building from scratch. With that in mind, SMP entered into a licensing agreement with Aperion Technologies, a Singapore-based company with a U.S. presence that owns the optical transceiver intellectual technology. Aperion will serve as SMP's manufacturing and supply partner for the 800G optical transceivers. It is important to note that Aperion obtained the core optical transceiver intellectual property and related technology from AceLink Technologies, a well-established Chinese optical transceiver company with more than 40 years of industry experience and the original developer of the technology. In addition to providing access to the technology, Aperion will support the launch of operations at the QBF through manufacturing setup assistance, workforce training, transitional personnel, and technical transfer support. While Aperion will provide an engineering specialist and other personnel to advise on manufacturing process, technical know-how, and production readiness, SMP will maintain its own dedicated on-site leadership team responsible for day-to-day operations, hiring, production, quality control, and overall commercial execution. To support its goal of producing U.S.-made optical transceivers, Aperion Technologies sought a country of origin ruling from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. In May 2026, Customs ruled that transceivers manufactured under the proposed production process qualify as products of the United States for Customs country of origin purposes. This reduces reliance on overseas production, mitigates tariff costs, and addresses national security priorities for critical AI infrastructure. Furthermore, SMP has entered into a license agreement with New Photonics, an Israeli photonics and optical networking technology company. New Photonics will be providing additional optical transceiver technology to upgrade from 800G to 1.6T, which will support future market demand as AI infrastructure evolves towards higher speed and energy demand. Both IP license agreements include profit sharing and equity ownership provisions, aligning all parties around SMP's long-term growth and reinforcing a clear, ongoing stake in the company's commercial success. While these agreements offer important market, manufacturing, and technical advantages, SMP maintains the ability to transition to alternate providers if any agreement expires without renewal. A final strategic move SMP is making was the selection of the QBF that is already well-suited for the optical transceiving manufacturing. SMP will lease and renovate a 100,000-square-foot photonics facility formerly operated by Coherent Corporation, located in Warren, New Jersey. The facility provides immediate access to specialized infrastructure for semiconductor and optical transceiver production, including existing clean rooms, manufacturing systems, and related equipment. Upon renovation, it will support the full lifestyle of the next generation optical transceivers, including research and development, manufacturing, assembly, and packaging. Using this existing facility, SMP allows SMP to significantly reduce time to market risk, lower upfront capital costs, and accelerate product startup. So Starman has met the program requirements by the creation of 20 new full-time jobs, a proposed medium salary that exceeds the 120% medium manufacturing salary in Somerset County, a capital investment of $150 million, a collaboration with Princeton University Office of Innovation with a financial commitment of up to $7 million. The qualified business facility is a total of 100,000 square feet with 95,000 square feet of usable space. Of that space, 62,500 will be used for manufacturing. Based upon these requirements, staff recommends an estimated tax award amount for Starman New Photonics of $7.5 million distributed annually over the five-year eligibility period, totaling the max award of $37,500,000. So the members of the authority are asked to approve the next NJ Manufacturing Program tax credit award to Starman New Photonics. Question.
That was a lot.
Very good.
That was a lot.
Thank you. This is, again, a project we've talked about multiple times at committee meetings. Mm-hmm. To be clear for everyone, it's a existing facility that's being renovated, repurposed. And the award is, the payout of the award is contingent upon performance, right? So it begins in year five?
Well, actually, yes. There's a three-year certification period. First, they need to certify in 3 years. There are 2 6-month extensions that they can ask for, so.
So, again, the award is based on?
Based on the requirements completely being fulfilled and certified.
have two things. Just unless I'm wrong, this is our first approval under the next New Jersey manufacturing program. I expect the first of many. This is a very important program. The leverage ratio is high, you know, between the capital that they're putting in and then what we're putting in 25%. You saw the Aspire, totally different class of asset, obviously, the 60% of eligible costs. So we're getting pretty good coverage here. And again, I think you'll start to see more and more of these move through. It's a very important area for the governor to see increased manufacturing investment in New Jersey. Repurposing the Coherent site is another thing we like to see. Taking some of these from the last generation of information technology and telecom is nice to see them get updated for today. Lastly, though, photonics itself, incredibly important bedrock technology to nearly everything we use today, whether it's an AI, fiber optic cabling itself, quantum computing, go down the list. It's not like a household name technology, but it is one that New Jersey has a historic leadership role in and continues to build. I also think the partnership we have with the SIC, with Nokia Bell Labs, they are another leader, as was Bell Labs, the predecessor, in this area. It's something we should all watch. That's something that has a lot of potential for New Jersey to really claim leadership on. You see Princeton University here. They themselves, from a research perspective, are big leaders in the photonics space. So it's something we're lucky to have here and something we want to spend more time on. And thank you and to the whole team for shepherding through this first Next New Jersey manufacturing credit on what was, as people saw in the diagram, a complex field with a lot of moving parts, international components. So thank you for that.
Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve the award as described? Thank you. Second?
Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. I was always told when you got a yes vote, you should leave immediately. Next on, we're going to move to CAFE. And just a note for those of you following at home, we have changed the order. So first, we're going to do Montclair.
Thank you, Chairman. So I'm Alyssa Glenbrook. I'm director of the CAFE program. I'm happy to bring you both of these CAFE projects this morning. So first, Montclair Public Library. The applicant is the trustees of the Free Public Library of the Township of Montclair, which is a governmental entity, and they're also serving as the lead development entity. The project involves two branches of the library in Montclair, which is in Essex County. The main library branch is at 50 South Fullerton Avenue. That is a full gut renovation of 49,120 square feet across three floors. And then the other branch is the Bellevue Avenue branch at 185 Bellevue Ave. It is a renovation and expansion. They're actually going to double the size of that from 5,200 to 10,800 square feet. We did do a site visit out here. I would just mention that it was pretty neat to go to, especially that historic branch. It's actually a Carnegie Library. And so as I talk about this, you will see like why CAFE has such an impact on the communities, because right now Bellevue Avenue branch really is not ADA accessible. And this is going to really increase the ability for folks to be able to use that space. So with the main library, there's going to be three zones. The first floor is going to be called the Commons, sort of a public gathering space, auditorium, art galleries, teaching kitchen, and outdoor performance terraces. The second floor is the workshop. So there they'll have a fab lab, makerspace, classrooms, architectural history and digital preservation area, workforce development center, and the Montclair Jazz Library. And then the third floor is the studio. It's really a youth-focused area with STEAM, Discovery Lab, podcasting studios, and a sensory room. And then the Bellevue branch, again, includes expanded children and teen spaces, multipurpose community rooms, again, that upgraded ADA access, and a redesigned plaza so that they can also host outdoor events there. This whole project really addresses critical needs. There has not been a major investment in Montclair Public Library System in a generation. And without CAFE, the library really would continue this like patchwork repairs and not have like this overall project. Without CAFE, those repairs just would fail to meet the real community needs. The library is one of the few institutions in Montclair that provides free and low-cost space for cultural arts organizations. The expansion significantly increased that capacity. As noted by the library director, while Montclair is considered a well-resourced community, there's always a segment that is still experiencing real needs. And this project ensures high-quality arts and cultural programming is accessible to all. It's not going to be limited to those who can afford private lessons or membership fees for private schools and clubs. The Adult School of Montclair, which has classes at the library, offers hundreds of courses annually in visual arts, music, languages, and most of them cost between $30 and $200. And then the traditional programs remain free, so things like author talks, workshops, community forums. And then the new facilities enable maker clubs, craft groups, language circles, and user-led cultural activities. This is a transit, both of these really are transit accessible locations with robust infrastructure. They will provide space for job seekers, technology access, and workforce development. And I can tell you, even while we were there, there was, you know, people trying to conduct job interviews. And so this is a place that folks can go and get that reliable internet connection that they need. It broadens the participation in the creative economy. And again, that ADA-focused design opens up programs to more visitors. As the mayor stated, quote, our libraries are hubs of community connection, lifelong learning, and equitable access to resources, a location for residents to share about the richness of our cultures. Now, on to some of the details. For the ownership, the township retains the legal title, but the library board exercises full control pursuant to statute, which satisfies the site control requirement. For the team, they have Akari and Ivano Architects, which is a firm that has extensive library design experience, including nearly 100 library projects just in New Jersey. On the funding, staff conducted a comprehensive financial review. The total project costs are $37.3 million. The eligible costs are just under $37 million, and that does include the soft costs, and they are within the soft cost cap. However, at time of application, they requested $36,661,719, and thus the recommended award size is the less of either the eligible project costs or the amount requested at time of application. Therefore, it is the $36,661,719 number. Staff has confirmed adequate and bona fide sources to cover all costs. The township will be doing bond financing in the amount of about $29.9 million. $5 million of those bonds, plus an additional $464,424, is being granted, does not need to be repaid. Plus, they have $2 million that they're going to be fundraising. Those two numbers together get you to the equity requirement, which is 20% of the total project cost. In addition, we did engage third-party financial consultants for their cost reasonableness analysis and financial analysis. We engaged SPD for cost reasonable and RES Group for financial analysis. The conclusions were without CAFE, you would have a negative IRR, and thus the project would not proceed. With CAFE, it's a 13.9% IRR, which is below the maximum allowable return of 30.45%. for comparable arts development projects in Essex County. Res Group concluded the project is of a scale and scope that would require substantial support from a CAFE award, and that the award does not overreach the project. For cost reasonableness, Sterling Project Development reviewed costs and found them to be reasonable. They concluded the budget is achievable with disciplined project management. Res Group found the $2 million fundraising plan to be reasonable and credible and grounded in historical performance. So again, the recommended award, 36661719 at 100% of eligible cost, which would be in five equal annual installments during the eligibility period after construction completion. And then there are the annual certification compliance requirements. Credit sale price, 90 cents on the dollar, exceeds the program minimum of 85 cents on the dollar. The proceeds of the tax credit sale will repay the township bonds. Timeline for construction is to start in first quarter 2028 with a 24-month duration. They also scored well above the minimum threshold for CAFE. And additionally, I just wanted to highlight, to qualify for CAFE, applicant has to meet both the definition of cultural arts institution and the facility must meet the definition of cultural arts institution facility. The applicant is a government entity and a library. We discussed it in the memo, and the underlying statute does reference library. Therefore, the legislature really did include those traditional library uses and facilities as a cultural arts institution facility. Staff did what I will call a painstaking review of all of the spaces, classified each one based on its intended use. It's documented in the exhibit that's attached to the memo, and well over 90% of the interior space is used for or directly supports cultural arts uses, satisfying a requirement that it be more principally for cultural arts, or more than 50% of the facility being dedicated to cultural arts. I did want to highlight those non-cultural arts uses, which included a teaching kitchen, cafe, business center, podcast studio, and sensory room. As far as open to the public, while the program rules list specific ways in which categories of cultural arts facilities must be open to the public, we had not contemplated specifically how a library fits in. However, during the review of this, we did determine it's really most similar to a museum or a place that has exhibits. And with that, accordingly, both locations of the project, both the main library and Bellevue Avenue branch, will be required to be accessible and open to the public on average at least 20 hours per week during the eligibility period. For Work First New Jersey, they are partnering with an organization called All the Way Up Adult Education Center, which provides skills-based training for workforce readiness and digital literacy, individualized coaching and support for job retention and advancement services, and GED preparation program. Applicant is in good standing with the state agencies. Within the memo, there's a recommendation about available resources, approximately $1.2 billion in uncommitted resources currently. This board uses $37 million, leaving $1.17 billion available. Staff does recommend a CAFE tax credit award of $36,661,719 to the trustees of the Free Public Library of the Township of Montclair, subject to our standard conditions, including submission within 1 year of executed financing commitments, site control evidence, permits approvals, and environmental sustainability plan. I'm happy to answer any questions.
This is our second CAFE award?
This is our fourth.
Yes. We did the Symphony?
We did Symphony, Liberty Science Center, commonly known as Mayer Performing Arts Center, but was actually a South Street Theater as well.
And you answered a question I was trying to figure out. They sell the bonds, and then our CAFE award allows them to repay the bonds.
It does. What I would note is in our review, there's not a written obligation for the library to repay directly, but that is what they told us they would do.
Any comments or questions?
I have one question.
Yeah.
With the larger size now, I assume their operating costs are going to go up to run the library. Do they have to
at that at all or a plan for how they would?
We do provide a pro forma, which includes the five-year eligibility period and includes those operating costs. And I would have to defer to our underwriting division and our third-party financial analyst to kind of provide more information on that. But we can certainly follow up with you.
You actually touched on a question I had. So I didn't think the libraries were qualified under CAFE, but you mentioned that in the statute actually it says library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, and it seems like this is obviously heavily oriented towards the whole cultural aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when this hits the public, which is now, other libraries may be looking to take advantage of the CAFE. And would a strict library renovation, just in a general sense, fall under this program? You know,
it could. It certainly could. So what we looked at were what were traditional library uses as opposed to what maybe is not a traditional library use. So if it's something that's not a traditional library use, we really scrutinized that and looked at whether or not that really is cultural arts or not. And like, for instance, the podcasting studios, we said that's not really a traditional library, so we excluded that when we did our calculation of what's cultural arts and non-cultural arts. It's not excluded from eligible costs because the way the statute is written, it really does kind of speak to once you are deemed an eligible applicant and eligible facility, all of the eligible costs, which are the construction costs for the entire project, come in. So even though those pieces might not be, you know, what we call cultural arts, they're all part of the larger project. So as long as the larger project is principally for the support and benefit of cultural arts, it all comes in. Now, there are certain things that are considered ineligible costs and which are laid out in the rules, things like EDA fees, incentive consultant fees. There's a cap on the soft cost. So there are certain things that become ineligible, but it's not really specifically looked at in the uses on that detail in the end.
What happens if they come up short on a fundraising goal?
So they have to come up with the equity. They have fines, they're required to meet those executed financing commitments within 1 year of board approval. If they do not meet that, I guess, you know, they're...
Got it.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this with respect to the orchestra, right? That I think we can give them some period of grace, but ultimately they do have to produce it. Or it could be subject to the prevailing wage law.
Absolutely.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve the award as described?
Move it, Leonard.
Thanks, Tim. I'll let Joshua consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it's approved. Next, the Battleship New Jersey.
This is an interesting project. This is also up for CAFE tax credit award. The applicant is called the Home Court Alliance for the USS New Jersey, Inc., and it is for their Battleship New Jersey redevelopment project in Camden. The applicant is a 501c3 nonprofit and will be serving as their own redevelopment entity. Again, there's a lovely photo of the battleship. We went down there. It is massive battleship. Actually, you know, because it's a battleship, for those of you who are familiar with the Intrepid, which is an aircraft carrier, like this is actually bigger than the Intrepid. Project is commonly known as Camden Battleship, located at 100 Clinton Street, Camden, and includes three main components. So first of all, there is a new visitor center. So that's on land. It's about 8,760 square feet. It's going to include a lobby, ticketing, what they call like artifact displays, so some exhibits as well, cafe, gift shop, administrative support area. There's also a parking garage, which will create 240 parking spaces. However, when we looked into it, the minimum zoning requirement for that area was 61 spaces. And so for cafe, we prorated that and are only paying for that part of the structure, the 61 spaces. That's about $4.1 million that is going to be excluded. For the battleship improvements, so with on the actual battleship, there's going to be a new permanent event structure on the fantail. It also includes ship stabilization, so with their mooring and things like that, large-scale painting and repairs, some new chillers and cooling towers, so it's really that infrastructure piece of it, Wi-Fi installation, CCTV security, lighting overhaul, bathroom renovations, elevator refurbishment, ballast tank repairs, pier repairs, and a generator replacement. So this project is really aimed at increasing the battleship's annual visitor numbers, which currently stands at about 80,000 visitors per year, and to really increase engagement, expanding their events clientele base and their capacity to host guests year-round, and really to position the Battleship New Jersey and the Camden Waterfront as a visitor destination. The project addresses fundamental operational deficiencies and positions it as a sustainable cultural and educational resource for Camden and the region. So some of those current deficiencies, really an inadequate visitor center, limited space right now for retail storage, offices, when students come and they assemble, there's really not a good place for that. And this will address some ADA accessibility as well. There's substandard restroom facilities, which is kind of interesting. They did actually show us those. And I will say, you know, when you go to a battleship and a museum like that, you're like, I want everything to be authentic, except the bathroom. Right? So that was kind of interesting. They were really substandard. No cellular connectivity below deck, and the aging mechanical system. And that's also like another thing that's kind of interesting because it's really like a harder kind of thing to solicit donations to get people to be interested in like, yeah, I'd like to donate money to help bring up the aging mechanical system. So this is why like cafe is such a vital component of this. They're going to have expanded event hosting capacity. They're going to have new ADA compliant facilities that address that critical equity gap. The enhanced facilities are going to generate increased revenue, which is also a point I really wanted to highlight. Right now, they really are dependent on state appropriations. And by having these increased revenues, it's going to reduce that dependency on state appropriations. They provide free access to all Camden City students. And the president of the Homeport Alliance for the USF New Jersey called this the most consequential undertaking since the museum's establishment 25 years ago. And he unequivocally stated, we would never be able to do this project without CAFE. We couldn't afford it. The mayor noted that the proposed expansion will strengthen Camden's economic base, enrich its cultural and historic offerings, and advance the city's long-term planning and redevelopment goals. It is listed on both the National and New Jersey Register of Historic Places, and it really does provide sort of this experiential what I will call analog engagement in this increasingly digital world. It provides substantive STEM and engineering programs. This organization, they told us they have accrued over 775,000 volunteer hours since becoming a museum, and they even highlighted that they have one current student volunteer who's going to be matriculating at the Naval Academy this fall. So you can see the kind of impact this project is going to have. The president describes the transformative student.
Yeah, we need to speed this part up because we have to get through our 10 different retrofit items.
All right, so. I will speed this up.
Thank you.
We'll move on. Ownership, applicant has demonstrated site control. They have deeds for the visitor center, land, and a long-term ground lease for the parking garage. They have a donation contract that they provided from U.S. Navy for the actual battleship. And they have also provided us with a copy of the assignment of management rights from the New Jersey Tidelands Council. As far as the team, they have PSS PSMS, engaged for project management. They are experienced in managing long-term design development projects. And the applicant itself has experience with large-scale projects, including the construction of the Battleships Pier and 2024 dry docking. For funding, which I think is on the next one, the total project costs are $24,250,000. Eligible costs are $19,948,100, and that is the recommended award size. There were some ineligible costs, like we talked about with the parking garage. This is mostly funded through Camden County Improvement Authority bond financing, as well as a $2.425 million Camden County Open Space Committee Historic Preservation Grant. The 20% equity contribution is through those grants I just mentioned, as well as 2.425 in property value. Staff did conduct a comprehensive financial review and again, we engaged Sterling Project Development on this. Without CAFE, they were at 0.6 IRR, project would not proceed. With CAFE, at 13.4 IRR, which is well below the maximum allowable return for Camden County of for this type of project of 36.26. SPD concluded that without the support of the CAFE award, it's highly unlikely the project would proceed, and that with the CAFE tax credit, the project becomes feasible, and that the award does not over-enrich the project. SPD did note that these are costs were based on early conceptual design, and that staying within budget as design advances will require discipline and owner decision making. Applicant responded that they understand and fully recognize that, and that all the costs were vetted with an independent cost estimator. Staff finds reasonable expectation the project is financially viable, and noting that the success does depend on maintaining that cost discipline throughout development. Staff confirmed adequate and bona fide sources to cover all costs. I think, you know, similar to the others, we could, it's five annual installments and annual certification of compliance is required. Timing, construction, first quarter 2027, 24-month duration. They met the minimum score, exceeded the minimum score. They met the definition of cultural arts institution and cultural arts institution. Facilities. It will be open to the public as a museum, and they met the other requirements such as Workforce New Jersey partnership with CoWorks Camden. And we have, as detailed in the memo, adequate CAFE resources at this time, and we do recommend a tax credit award of $19,948,100 to the Homeport Alliance for USF New Jersey, subject to our standard conditions.
And again, here, like the one before, essentially our award is repaying the bond, the Camden County bond.
Exactly.
Effectively. Any comments, questions?
Chair, I almost feel un-American if I don't vote for this, so I'll make the motion.
Oh, you beat me to it. I'll second.
All right.
John Johnson.
I think we should have a board meeting on the Battleship New Jersey when it's done, because it would be cool to see. Any further questions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed,
aye.
Opposed recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Jewel, do you want to give a DLRC committee report?
Yes, thanks, Chair. The Director's Loan Review Committee met on June 1st to review and consider one item, a standalone bond for QCF Advantage LLC. The staff will provide a presentation of this item as a part of today's agenda. Thanks.
Marina?
Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
The applicant, QCF Advantage LLC, is requesting authority assistance as a tax-exempt bond conduit issuer for a series of revenue bonds for the QCF Advantage Behavioral Health Project Series 2026 social bonds in an aggregate principal amount not exceeding $653.4 million tax-exempt and federally taxable. The applicant entity was formed in Delaware and registered in New Jersey in April of this year. The entity is wholly owned by QCFI, Inc., a Georgia nonprofit corporation organized in 1997 to own and operate hospitals, substance use disorder treatment facilities, mental health care facilities, senior and assisted living facilities, and other inpatient and outpatient health care services. Authority assistance will enable the applicant, QCF Advantage, to finance the portfolio acquisition of Advantage Behavioral Health from ABHS Acquisition Corp., an outpatient behavioral health services provider founded in 2017, headquartered in Laurel Springs, New Jersey, with various locations across 8 states, including 48 facilities in New Jersey. The leased locations in the other 7 states are a part of the corporate transaction, but are not a part of the requested NJEDA financing. The project to be undertaken with the proceeds of the 2026 bonds is 2 parts. The first is the purchase of all of the membership interests in the 3 New Jersey limited liability companies, Advantage Behavioral Health and Wellness LLC, Advantage Behavioral Health Services 2 LLC, and ABC Real Estate Holdings LLC, and 1 California limited liability company, Victory Bay Residential Holdings CA LLC, from ABHS Acquisition Corp., or principals or affiliates thereof. Collectively, these 4 acquired entities and the applicant entity will be named the borrower on this bond project. The second use of proceeds will be for the financing of the acquisition, construction, expansion, renovation, and equipping of all of the property, building, lands located at the 48 New Jersey locations across Bergen, Burlington, Camden, Mercer, Morris, Ocean, Passaic, and Union counties, with 39 of the 48 locations concentrated in Camden County, New Jersey. The 2026 bond issue will be a non-rated limited public offering sold to qualified institutional buyers or institutional accredited investors such as high-yield institutional bond funds, with Cain Brothers, a division of KeyBank Capital Markets, as the sole bond underwriter. Final closing of the bond issuance is anticipated on or around July 30, 2026. The authority is in receipt of a draft preliminary limited offering memorandum that is in substantially final form. The Series 2026 bonds will be issued in the denomination of $100,000 and integral multiples of $5,000 in excess thereof. Anticipated maturities on these bonds will be 5, 10, 20, 30, and 35 years. The bond proceeds will also fully fund a debt service reserve fund deposit up to an amount equal to a maximum annual debt service on the 2026 bonds, establish a transition holdback fund to hold a portion of the purchase price subject to release in accordance with certain requirements, fund certain reserves, fund a portion of interest due on the 2026 bonds during the transition period for the project, finance working capital, and pay costs associated with the issuance of the 2026 bonds. The Credit and Finance Department has reviewed all financial information pertaining to this bond project, inclusive of a feasibility study, which forecasts cash flow for the years 2027 to 2031 with satisfactory results for the anticipated base case. EDASAP has additionally performed a stress test of the calculated debt service coverage ratio using the maximum amortized annual debt service of the bonds with sufficient coverage for the applicant and all borrowing entities to be able to repay the maximum annual debt service of the bonds. All major credit considerations, risk factors, and corresponding mitigating factors, as well as an in-depth industry analysis, have been assessed and addressed in the confidential financial review memo provided to members of the board. Based on EDA staff's financial review, the Credit and Finance Department has concluded that the bond underwriter has taken reasonable and appropriate measures to structure the bonds in proportion to the identified risks. Tax clearance has been received for the applicant entity and for 2 of the 4 entities to be acquired, with clearance pending for the 2 remaining entities. Valid tax clearance will be a requirement prior to the closing of the bonds, as outlined in the bond resolution. A legal review has been completed on all 5 entities with no issues of concern and with clearance recommended. Sister agency checks were completed on all entities, with 4 of the 5 entities cleared and 1 entity with pending results from the Department of Labor to be addressed, finalized, and cleared before the closing of the bonds. This request for the 2026 bond project is for final approval, as the final closing of the bonds
issuance is anticipated on or around July 30th. Thank you.
Any comments or questions? So today, our actual motion is to approve the application of QCF. What's our actual motion today?
Yes, the request is for the application for a final approval of the bond project.
I can hear a motion to approve.
Antoine Johnson.
Second.
Perfect.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. Thank you. All right, next we're going to go to Clean Energy. Andy Garcia, this is the Retrofit NJ program. We're going to consider there's 10 items before us, and he's going to give us an overview of the program, a brief description of the items.
Hey, hello, my name is Andy Garcia, Product Officer with the Clean Energy Team, and today I will be presenting applications under the Reducing Emissions Through Retrofits, Optimizations, Fuel Switching, and Innovative Technologies Grant Program, also known as Retrofit.
Can you speak up a little bit? Hard to hear you back here.
Retrofit New Jersey is a pilot initiative that was approved by the EDA Board on October 9, 2025. The program was designed to support multi-pronged, large-scale retrofit projects that enable holistic energy improvements at buildings, campuses, and multi-building facilities across New Jersey. The program is funded through 2023 through 2025 Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative funding, also known as REGI. 50% of the funding pool, or $37.5 million, was set aside for a one-year period for projects located in overburden communities. Board also has delegated authority to increase the funding pool if application demand exceeds initial applications. In terms of the award structure, the minimum grant award is $2.5 million, and the maximum for building decarbonization for projects is $10 million and $12.5 million for thermal energy network projects. The program covers 50% of project costs for commercial applicants and 60% for institutional and nonprofit applicants. Projects in overburden communities will receive a 5% disbursement bonus. To be eligible, applicants must be commercial, industrial, or institutional building owners or equivalent tenants. An equivalent tenant is deemed to have at least that extent 1 year past the project's completion date. Projects must have a minimum eligible cost of $5 million and must cover at least three of the following qualifying scopes: on-site renewables, on-site energy storage, heating electrification, refrigerant replacement, and general energy efficiency. Critically, every project must demonstrate a reduction of at least one ton, metric ton of CO2 equivalent for every $250 in grant funding. Today, we'll actually be requesting $79.9 million in funding using delegated authority to fully fund 10 projects, which includes an increase to the XL Plastics application over what is listed on the memo. Again, we're requesting funding for the 10 applications. It's spanning a wide range of applicant types, from public transit authorities and universities to hotels and industrial manufacturers. Collectively, we're seeking $79.02 million in grants across 10 projects in 9 New Jersey municipalities. This will result in a 2.2 multiplier of spending for a total of $238 million in project costs. Of the $79 million being requested, $50 million would go to projects in overburden communities. The projects in total will result in 20.3 megawatts of new solar generation and 86.9 megawatt hours of battery storage capabilities. The solar installation alone will be the equivalent of the power used by 2,930 New Jersey homes. And the total energy savings when accounting for new solar and efficiency measures results in 30.79 megawatts of grid savings. These projects represent 5 sectors and are projected to generate 855 direct jobs and 270 indirect jobs across New Jersey. We can go through each one of the projects. Next slide. The first one is the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, located within the port at 255 and 260 Kellogg Street, along with 111 Corbin Street in Newark, New Jersey. This is a multi-building energy efficiency project, including electrification, solar PV installation, fuel switching, and general energy efficiency. This project is located in an overburden community, and the recommended grant award is $2,874,953, inclusive of a 5% overburden community bonus. It's estimated lifetime CO2 equivalent of 10,952 metric tons of CO2 reduction. The next project is...
Maybe just take 1 second on this, since this is the first one we'll go through, and then, you know, we can go through the other ones in a more speedy manner. It gives a sense here. For example, they're actually, in this case, they're funding $19 million of the project, and our credit is $2.8 million, correct?
Yeah, so they capped at the $250 per ton. So
they're making a significant investment in this.
Yes.
And as we go through, we can see how each of these sort of falls in that relevance, you know, relative.
Yeah, so the larger projects tend to percentage and higher, lower cost per CO2. The next project is Port Authority Trans Hudson, located in Path Yard C. That is 96, 100, 120, and 122 Academy Street in Jersey City, New Jersey. This is a multi-building electrification and energy efficiency project, including solar, fuel switching, and general energy efficiency. This project is also located in an overburdened community. The recommended grant award for this is $9,517,434, including a 5% overburdened community bonus. And the estimated CO2 equivalent reduction for this project is 36,256 metric tons of CO2. The next project is Camden County VOTEC. This is located at 343 Berlin Cross Keys Road in Sicklerville, New Jersey. This is an institutional campus retrofit, including solar PV, refrigerant replacement, and general energy efficiency. The recommended grant award for this project is $10 million, and the estimated CO2 equivalent reduction of 44,536,000 metric tons of CO2. Next project is Christchurch Care Center of New Jersey, located at 140 Green Pond Road in Rockaway, New Jersey. This is a nonprofit community facility. Planning to do solar PV, heating electrification, refrigerant replacement, and general energy efficiency. The recommended grant award for this project is $6,912,694, with an estimated CO2 reduction of 29,265 metric tons of CO2. The next is the Housing Authority of Plainfield, also known as Richmond Towers. This is located at 510 East Front Street in Plainfield. This is a public housing retrofit, including solar PV, heating electrification, refrigerant replacement, and general energy efficiency. Again, this is located in an overburdened community, and the recommended grant award for this project is $2,992,534, including a 5% overburdened community bonus. The CO2 reductions for this project is 11,400 metric tons of CO2. Our next project is Showboat Hospitality, located at 801 Boardwalk in Atlantic City. This is a hotel energy savings energy system overhaul, including battery and thermal energy storage, refrigerant replacement, and energy efficiency. The recommended grant award for this project is $9,892,850, with an estimated CO2 equivalent reduction of 321,092 metric tons of CO2. Our next project is Somerset Homedale Development, also known as Bellworks in Homedale, New Jersey, located at 101 Crawford Crossing Road. This is a large use commercial retrofit, including a large solar PV over 6 acres, battery storage, refrigerant replacement, and energy efficiency program project. The recommended grant award is a cap of $10 million with an estimated CO2 equivalent reduction of 275,263 metric tons of CO2. I will note that NJEDA is a tenant of Bellworks in Fort Monmouth, which is owned by the same entity. However, our team did not have anything to do with those lease negotiations. Next is Rutgers State University of New Jersey, located in Piscataway, New Brunswick. This is our only thermal energy network project that was submitted and involves a replacement of underground high-temperature hot water distribution piping, and the recommended grant award for this is $8 million with an estimated CO2 reduction of 32,000 metric tons of CO2. Our next project is DGMB Casinos, also known as Resorts, located at 1133 Boardwalk, Atlantic City. This is a hospitality retrofit with solar PV, battery storage, and building management systems. The recommended grant award is $8,836,767 with an estimated CO2 equivalent reduction of 39,941 metric tons. And our last project is XL Plastics. And again, this one differs from the board memo. This is an industrial manufacturing retrofit with battery storage, refrigerant replacement, and fuel switching. The recommended grant award for this is $10 million with an estimated lifetime CO2 equivalent of 44,541 tons. That concludes the 10 projects seeking approval. Taken together, these projects represent a combined grant commitment of $79.02 million. This is projected to deliver an estimated lifetime CO2 equivalent reduction of 844,000 metric tons of CO2. The portfolio spans transit infrastructure, public schools, affordable housing, university, hospitality, and industrial manufacturing, that demonstrating the breadth of retrofit New Jersey reach across New Jersey and economy and communities. And again, these projects will are projected to generate 855 direct jobs and 270 indirect jobs. That is our presentation.
Are there any questions on the projects that have been presented today for from the board?
Yes. Overall, the program, like, is there a limitation on what types of government entities are eligible? Mm-hmm. Is it any government entity that wants to participate?
Yes, anything that was commercial, industrial.
Any other comments or questions?
I have a quick comment, which is just there was recently an op-ed about what's the point of REGI. This is the point of REGI. You can see all the work that this is funding, all the jobs it's creating, all the greenhouse gas it's getting off of the grid, all the new energy and storage being produced. So I think it's a real testament to what this program can fund. And it's not some mystery thing that's costing us all money for no reason. So it's a very strong set of proposals, very diverse all over the state and a lot of different communities. So it's good to see this today.
Okay, before voting, I'd like to request a motion to enter executive session to discuss a matter involving attorney-client privilege and potential litigation. Could I have a motion to enter executive session, please?
Move it.
Josh, Charles.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, hearing none, we will now enter executive session.
Thank you for standing by. The speakers will be back momentarily. You will hear music until the call resumes. Thank you. We are now rejoining the public meeting.
You have joined the main room.
To approve the 9 of the 10 retrofit NJ program applicants as presented above, and delegated authority to approve any remaining timely filed applications for the reasons presented in the executive session. We will vote separately on the official name of it. Item number 7, Somerset Homedale Development, aka Bell Works. So this is a motion to approve the other 9 items described above, along with delegated authority as described in the executive session.
Can you just say that the 9 that we're approving out loud for the record?
Sure. They are the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, the Port Authority Trans Hudson Corporation, the Camden County Votech School, Christ Church Care Center of New Jersey, the Housing Authority of Plainfield, Showboat Hospitality LLC, Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey, DGMB Casino LLC, and XL Plastics, Inc. Could I hear a motion to approve those items and the delegated authority as described? Just to be clear, the motion is to approve the 9 described applications, as well as delegated authority to approve any remaining timely filed applications for the reasons presented in executive session. Josh, I'll consider that a proposal. Can I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or extensions? Hearing none, those items as described are passed. Next, we need to approve the award to Somerset Homedale Development, LP, also known as Bell Works. Is there a recusal?
Yes, Robert Shimko.
And Robert, state the reason, please.
Conflict of interest. We have done work in the facility, and I'm assuming we're going to be pursuing this also.
Got it. Thank you. Noted for the record. Okay. Can I hear a motion to approve? Thank you, Elizabeth. Tim, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals other than Robert or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Did we do that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. I guess, Tim. Delegated authority or board memoranda to consider?
In fact, yes, we have 2. Kevin, thank you. There are 2 delegated authority members pertaining to economic transformation and credit underwriting. Economic transformation delegated authority approvals, declinations, and other actions of Q1 2026. Credit underwriting delegated authority approvals for May 2026. Including there, we did NJ Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program 14 credit applications through for $31 million. 123 Angel Investor Tax Credit Program applications were approved with 30 emerging technology businesses benefiting from the tax credit. Then under Evergreen, we approved 2 qualified venture firms, 1 investment of $1 million, and 1 follow-on for $100,000. 6 NJ Cool applications were approved for a total of $3.4 million. And then lastly, under the direct loan program, a loan was approved for $900,000 for a software company to purchase a property and create 60 new jobs over the next 2 years.
By the way, Tony Kosher would have been better. any other business before the board? Anyone on the board, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Thank you. Second?
Antoine Johnson.
Okay, Jewel. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for everybody attending today in person here in Trenton. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
I ran out of
the Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using Verizon Conferencing Services. You may now disconnect.